If only I had that authority. No, there you go. So anyway, it's great that I've not lost, well, actually, I've not lost many of you. I'm sure everybody will drift back eventually. So what we're doing next? The other thing which I'm doing at the moment is I've got weekly study thoughts in the area of invitation. So I do kind of five thoughts for the day. So they appear on my website, unlockingthegrowth.com, and they're generally speaking all in the area of invitation and fear and inviting people to stay and things and stuff like that. So there's a lot of free stuff on the website, which is unlockingthegrowth.com. For example, the 12 steps, there's 12 5-minute films that you can download free. There's all sorts of stuff like that. But there's also, if you want to study invitation with me, I record, there's 250 written blogs on it in a library that I've kind of assembled. There's video blogs. As I go around the world, I interview people about invitation and what works and, you know, et cetera, and what their invitation story is. And again, if that's of any use to you, then basically kind of when you get the cards, just email me and just say, I'm just interested in, you know, kind of receiving that. But there's free stuff there anyway. There's tons of stuff which is free. This is for people who really want to work on this, because I think we're just so weak in this area of invitation. It's not something that we've really kind of studied too much. And I think if we kind of study it together, that might be useful. Also, I do kind of offer some Skype calls. If anybody really wants to get invitation into the life of the congregation, and by the way, if you do, trouble is coming your way. I'm just telling you, trouble is coming your way. This is not easy stuff. It will come your way, as it comes my way every single day. But again, if there's support that's wanted, then I'm very happy to do some Skype calls. And again, just email me about that. Okay, so if we don't deal with this, then we get that. God blesses us with that. So how does this work? Congregational culture eats strategy for breakfast. Well, let's just say that basically it's time in a parish for a new priest. Happy days, eh? Anyway, and then you select a priest, and then it's the honeymoon period, which lasts until you meet them. Anyway, and then normally the Episcopal priest arrives in by kind of American post in a box, you know, DHL. And the congregation gather around the box and hope you're not flat packed. Anyway, they open the box and you jump out. And in a ceremony that goes on around the world, the congregation or the representatives of the congregation award you with keys. And all of a sudden you jangle for the rest of the ministry with them. All of a sudden, authority starts to course through your veins as you receive these keys. And you start to walk around your new church building. As you walk around your new church building, your eye alights on something. Nobody knows why. A dissertation needs to go into this. Nobody knows why your eye alights on something. And this strange thought comes into your mind. I must move the font. Now, it could be a number of things, but let's stick with the font. So you spend the next 5 minutes moving the font 5 centimeters. 5 centimeters. But then you're happy then. Happy. And you go away for the rest of that first day and have cups of tea and coffee, because don't quite know what goes on during the day, but anyway, something does. Later on that first day, you sweep back into your new church building because you're practicing becoming a bishop. And the first miracle of your ministry has occurred. The font is back where it was before. God gives a clue early on as to what the ministry is all about. It's about moving the blooming font. That's what it's about. No, what happens is, you come in as a new priest, a new church leader, and you say, this is the way we're going to do things around here from now on. And the congregation go, no, this is the way we've always done things around here from now on. Don't you know the word for eternity, rector? Always. And you go, yes, I've just been retrained. I can now face this. Here we go. This is the way we're going to do things around here from now on. And the congregation go, hard nuts. No, this is the way we've always done things, until we get into a hostage situation, and which is why we have the year of Jubilee, and you have to move around, you know, from time to time to different parishes. So the thing is, either we face this stuff, or frankly, as you know, we can become hostage to our fears. It's one or t'other, isn't it? You know, God either kind of blesses us in one or the way. I'm not saying that this stuff is easy. It isn't. It isn't easy. But if we don't deal with it, we get that. You know, and so you get this kind of this internal looking all the time about internal things rather than it going outward. So congregational culture eats strategy for breakfast. But you know, in your congregation, there might actually be a bit of hope. Oh, no, maybe not. Anyway, there might be somewhere. No, I did say to you that my findings from around the world is that between 80 to 95% of a congregation isn't going to be doing any inviting whatsoever. But I found that there is a small sliver of the congregation who actually doesn't go down that way of thinking. They're a very strange creature, very rare in the church, but they're known as serial inviters. Right? They're very strange. You know, like they could be speaking to you, all of a sudden they've just seen somebody with some tattoos across the road, and off they are to go and invite them. You know, they're completely mad, you know, kind of, but serial inviters get really, really annoyed with me. Really annoyed with me, because they just don't understand what it is I do. They say, what do you do, Michael? Well, I go and, you know, talk about invitation in the life of the church. And they go, why? Well, because it's sort of missing. It isn't. Because serial inviters, you know, they just invite. They don't understand all of this stuff. You know, they just invite. I met a serial inviter called Rowley. In Melbourne, Australia, around about 4 weeks ago now. And Rowley was getting agitated in the very beginning bit of the seminar, which is always very tricky for me. Getting really agitated. And he, in the end, he couldn't hold it in much longer. He says, oh, this is all a load of rubbish, this. This is just nonsense. You know, he's very simple. He's simple, he said to everybody. Very simple. He says, all you do is this. He said, you look at your friends and you go, that person there is a 2-year project. That person there is a 5-year project. It's going to take 5 years, you know, for them to accept it. That person there is a 10-year project. It's very simple. Very, very simple indeed. And then he said, I was speaking to one of my kind of, one of my friends who I've been, you know, inviting to church. And he said, listen, I've been inviting you to church for 2 years now. He said, in the end, you'll be coming in a pine box anyway, so you might as well come of your own volition. They are completely politically incorrect. Completely politically incorrect. Yeah, but they are there. You know, if you can find them, somebody in your congregation who doesn't get any of this stuff, and actually, you know, kind of, is already, it's not a problem for them. If you can build on them, if you can work with them, it's what I would call the good soil. You know, they've got it. You know, they've got it. And can we work with them to slowly but surely bring in this idea that inviting is indeed okay. They face more rejection than anybody else, the serial inviter, because they invite. They hear people say no, but it doesn't make any difference to them whatsoever. No difference at all. But I think basically kind of the ultimate serial inviter is God. I think God is the ultimate serial inviter. I think we'll probably, although it's nice breeze, I think we'll just close this. There's a storm brewing. They are the ultimate, God is the ultimate serial inviter. I think I was just told before that in the kind of lectionary reading for Sunday, we've got somewhere in Revelation where kind of God is saying, come, come. And again, you know, we see all the way through, you know, kind of the Bible, God is an invitational God. And we reject that invitation, you know, and so God is the ultimate in this area. So what we kind of get into is something called the dip as a way of looking at things. This is a book by Seth Godin. And we've got this disease called initiative-itis, you know, where we all need a new program, a new special thing, a new event, you know, and it all starts off. All starts off, you know, oh, this will work, you know, this will kind of sort it out, and you know, all really exciting when it begins, and then it goes down. Then it goes down, and so therefore we need something else. We need something else special to kind of get, you know, the congregation going again. Never quite learning why the last initiative didn't work, and so if you wondered why you. It's almost as if we use exhaustion as a status symbol nowadays. We are so busy. You know, it's program after program, special event after special event. We never get a chance to kind of reflect on the last one before we're moving on to the next one. What I think Christianity kind of shows us is that actually God is working more in the dip than he is perhaps in the mountaintop. Though I walk in the valley of the shadow of death, I will fear no evil. There are things to be learnt in the valley. There are things to be learnt in the no. There are things to be learnt in failure and in the wilderness that actually God wants to lead us there. And if we are there, suspect God. If we hear ourselves saying the same thing over and again, the same patterns keep on coming through, suspect God is trying to get through to us somehow. The dip. The Chinese have a saying about what the real problem is going on here. They say, it's a bit like a three-way mirror. The first mirror is how you see yourself. The second mirror is how other people see you. So we often get impacted with how other people see us and also how we're thinking about ourselves. But the third mirror is how God sees us. Are we not the sons and daughters of the living God? Isn't God with us? Maybe not, okay. Really, at the heart of this is an identity crisis. We've forgotten who we are. If Emmanuel, our God, is with us, really, this would sort of, it's powerful, by the way, powerful stuff, but actually it would lose its impact if we remembered that God is actually with us. So what matters most is how you see yourself. Is how you see yourself. It's just remembering. You know, it's just remembering, you know, I can do all things through Christ who strengthens me. It's just remembering these things. So we need to set some no goals. Yes is the destination, but no is how we get there. It is through our vulnerability. It is through our fears. It's pushing through all of those things that actually we find a promised land of sorts. You know, I think the way kind of God disciples us is he perhaps works on one or two things in our hearts, you know, that are not quite there. And the same things come round over and over and over again until we get the point. Ah, okay, I need to sort that out. How do I sort it out? But I need to sort it out. We get it sorted out with God, and we have this kind of period of peace for at least a couple of weeks until God graciously blesses us with the next area that God is sorting out in our lives. I think God is discipling us. God is discipling us. But could it be possible that our congregations have become educated beyond their level of obedience? That we've got so much stuffed into our heads that essentially, you know, it doesn't mean anything anymore. It just doesn't mean anything. It's become so familiar that it's over familiar. Rabbis, I think what rabbis used to do is they used to teach and then send their students out on a bit of a practical to see if they've learnt what they'd just been taught. Maybe that's a good pattern somewhere. What we've changed that for is, oh, well, let's kind of get us around, you know, kind of the Bible, and let's kind of study this. But then don't take it further than that. So, you know, don't be afraid, I'm with you. What does that mean? You know, what does it mean unless we actually go and have a practice of that? Jesus, I think, was acting in this way when he basically sent 72 disciples out on a practical. He said, and I don't know why he didn't call it a back to synagogue Sabbath, but anyway, I'll find that out in heaven. Anyway, so he sends them out and he gives them some instructions. Okay, he said, I want you to kind of invite people to kind of be prepared about the kingdom of God. Just invite them, you know. And he said, but there's two things that's going to happen to you. Two things. Number one, you will meet people of peace. People God has already prepared for this invitation. Stay with them. Stay with them. If only God, if only Jesus had left the instructions there, everything would have been okay, wouldn't it? He didn't. He said, you are going to meet people who will reject you. People who will reject you. What I need you to do is to wipe the dust from your feet and move on to the next town, because I've got other people waiting for the invitation. When you hear people say, my friends won't like it, I'd like to say, there are 7 billion other people on this planet, you know. It's almost as if we worry over one person. Whereas I'm suggesting that God is actually kind of opening up the possibilities that as we go around, there may well be people in conversation that we can just invite. Yes, we need to set some no goals. No does not mean never. No does not mean never. You'll have to look at this afterwards. Anyway, no does not mean never. No means not yet. Not yet. That's all it means, is not yet. I was just really kind of interested just recently, and again, this is what happens to me on a day-by-day basis. One of the blogs I'm going to be kind of writing is about kind of the dealing with fear as a Navy pilot. Of course, I was given that last night. But thinking over the past few days about first responders. As we are running away from the danger, first responders are running towards the danger. I think this is a really interesting image for us as Christians, that instead of running away from our fears, what we've got to do is to run towards our fears. That we're responding, you know, first to God. That is our first response. That essentially, if God prompts us, we'll run towards it. Easy to say, less easy to do. As first responders. The truth sets you free. This is really the truth. This is really what's going on. Really. Or whatever else you get from that exercise. This is really the truth. Dig into it. There'll be other things underneath it. You know, kind of, this is really the truth. The truth sets you free. Now, before it sets you free, it makes you miserable. It means you're going to have to do some of this inviting stuff and face some of this stuff. But indeed, the truth, once seen in the light, can set us free. But, as I've found around the world, some people stumble over the truth, pick themselves up, and go on their merry way as if nothing had happened at all. And that's why I'm begging you, now that I've come, and I've, you know, don't believe me that this is what you will get from your congregations. Don't believe me. Just do the exercise of what is stopping us inviting people to church. Do the exercise, and then with God, work out what might be going on. What might be going on? The great news is that David killed Goliath with one small stone. It's normally one small change in our lives, one small change of thinking that transforms and renews. Whilst fears are very, very difficult to face at times, actually, intellectually, it's quite simple in the sense that from I can't do this to I can do this is an understandable jump. It's just a one small change of thinking that God isn't there in all of this, to God, of course, is there in the midst of all of this. But it's normally 10 o'clock at night. 10 o'clock at night, anywhere in the world, 10 o'clock at night. I should be going to bed at 10 o'clock at night. I say to myself, Michael, go to bed. It's 10 o'clock at night. And then I hear a little ping. An email has landed. And I say to myself, Michael, go to bed. It's 10 o'clock. Well, it's my fault now, isn't it? My fault if I can't resist just looking at that email. Normally at 10 o'clock at night, it's normally a church leader writing an email to me, telling me why they're never, ever, ever, ever going to be doing another invitation Sunday ever again. So, my psychoanalyst has told me that I have to share some of my 10 o'clock at night emails with you. Not too many, because they'll send you as doolally as I am. But it's my own fault, isn't it? You know, so not too many. So here are the type of emails that I receive as to why we shouldn't be doing any of this stuff. That's all. So here we go with my 10 o'clock at night emails. St. Paul's has been part of this once before I came, and it wasn't very successful, probably because they're dreadful at inviting people. That was the reason given for never ever doing an invitational event, again. Now, you see, there is always an answer. It might not be the answer that we want or we're looking for, but God always provides an answer in all of this. I think God in that situation was saying, the people have a problem with invitation. Focus on it. But no, like Jonah, God sends us to Nineveh and we dash off in the opposite direction. Here's another one. Back to church Sunday is not our preferred medium for mission. So let's work on this one together. A friend inviting a friend is not your preferred medium for mission. Is it an enemy inviting a friend? You know what? Look, the thing is, it didn't work. I'm telling you, it's hard stuff. But we can't admit sometimes that it didn't work and then go, why didn't it work? To look more deeply rather than putting some spiritual claptrap over, you know, a wound which frankly is there. This next one, I don't want anything to do with whatsoever. It's all right for you lot laughing. I have to face this on a regular basis. Right, the quality of this one means it can only come from one area of the church. Yeah, this was a dean of a cathedral. So the quality, you know, the intellectual kind of thinking here was absolutely kind of fantastic. In fact, the dean said to me, we're going to keep Back to Church Sunday special, so we'll do it every 5 years. My goodness, anyway. This will only work if someone spends thousands of pounds on national publicity. My goodness. Deary me. You know, kind of, money's going to solve the problem. I don't think so, somewhere along the line. The logic, by the way, at 10 o'clock at night is always great. You know, kind of, logic is always great. Listen to this one. Last year, very few invitees responded. I suspect because very few of our members invited anyone. Those that tried in the past have lost confidence that people will respond. Oh, there's hope now. We've got to the kind of what the real issue is. How are we going to deal with it? We need a fresh idea to get them going again. There you've got your initiative, you see. That's where you've got the exhaustion coming along. We always need a fresh idea. You know, something new coming along. Rather than actually working on those that tried it in the past have lost confidence that people will respond. God always gives us a little nudge in this, but we tend to go, as I say, in the opposite direction. So we've got to have a way of, you know, thinking about church, which essentially kind of comforts us in our generation. This is a Dave Walker Church Times cartoon, quite crowded in church tonight. I said to Dave Walker, this cartoon is a load of rubbish. Load of rubbish, this cartoon. Number one, they wouldn't all be sitting together. Number two, they're too far forward. And number three, it looks as if there's some young people. It's a load of rubbish, that cartoon. But actually, what the cartoon does, it shows us God's gift for our generation. God's gift for our generation. We have space to grow. Isn't God good? God has given us space to grow. We don't have to build some new church buildings, at least for another couple of weeks, anyway. We have space to grow. I always find it quite kind of interesting when a church wants to show me around their premises. You know, to show me around their premises. You know, this is where we put our, it's always a laugh for a UK church, but this is where we put our one-year-olds, this is where we put our two-year-olds, this is where we put our three-year-olds. Anyway, so kind of to show me around, you know, the premises, you know, like, the, you know, etc. Because I always want to say, so how long are you staying here? It's almost as if our building sometimes holds us in. You know, as if this is where we've landed, this is where we're staying, there isn't going to be growth, so therefore we've just built it for where we are at this moment in time. We should be careful what we think in these areas, I think. So the antidote to my 10 o'clock at night emails is this: embrace failure. When it looks like death, it's probably life. It's probably life. Every obstacle is a gift. Every conflict, an opportunity. The spirituality of failure. That actually, it's in the midst of failure. So this is a great way to live. If things are going well, fabulous. If things are not going so well, fabulous. There's something in the midst of failure with all of this. I found an early picture of Albert Einstein as a baby. It's an early one. And Albert Einstein said, the most incomprehensible thing about the world is that it is comprehensible. You wouldn't have science if it wasn't, you know, kind of, if the world wasn't able to experiment and find find ways of getting the results. You know, there's a predictability there. It's comprehensible. There seems to be an architect behind all of the things that we actually kind of see. But Einstein said, the thinking that got us here isn't the thinking that's going to get us where we need to be. The thinking that got us here is not going to be the thinking that we need to get us where we need to be. I mean, you know, be transformed by the renewing of your mind. It has more weight, I understand, if Einstein says it. But anyway, it's the same thing. Thinking is really, really important to God, I think. So many people say to me, well, how do you invite? How do you invite, Michael? You know, kind of all well and good, all of this, but how do you invite? I do honestly think that the why do we invite, is far more important than the how we invite. Once you sort out the why you invite, then the how comes more easily. It's working on why we're not doing this stuff and finding out where our relationship with God is in the midst of the whole thing. In invitation, we can teach what anyone and what everyone can immediately do. I'm so pleased that the original kind of chroniclers of the Bible called that book, after the Gospel of John, the activities of the early church. You know, the activities of the apostles. I'm so glad they didn't call it the worship album of the apostles, or the choir of the apostles, or, you know, honestly, sometimes the activities, it's about doing, it's about, you know, faith without works is dead, isn't it? It's, you know, and this is where we're supposed to put our faith, where our vulnerability. An invitation is just a cracking discipleship tool. So forget about the yeses and nos. Forget about that bit. Forget it. Think about invitation in your present congregation to move them on in their relationship with God. And there's going to be a battle. This afternoon in the Q&A, what I'm going to try and do, for those of you who are interested, is I've just looked where kind of church leaders have taken some of the stuff, you know, that have been to a couple of seminars that I've done, and then translated it into their own situation and come up with innovative ways to actually, some best practice ideas. So that's what I'm going to do this afternoon. Just give 10 best practice ideas. Just take about 10 minutes to do that, and then I'm very, very happy to answer in Q&As. So we're going to finish off now with the 12 steps. And I say, you know, I know everybody sort of wants the 12 steps, but this is the most important. So last night we ended up with the gift of friendship. Number 5 is the power of story. It would take an Anglican or Episcopal liturgical commission sitting 15 years to get story back into our acts of worship. It's a shocker. Apparently, story ends after the book of Revelation, as if God is not working in the story of our lives today. You know, we've got to tell what God is doing. Why don't we do this? You know, it's as if we've locked God in time somewhere. No, we've got to tell the story of what God is doing today. So the type of story I'm thinking about is what I kind of said before. You know, could we get people up telling their invitation stories? You know, my mum dragged me to church, but I'm so grateful to my mum. My mum was called Jackie. Jackie didn't know much about theology, but she just invited me to church. Where would I be without my mum to retell the ordinary stories and leave it there? But what we tend to do when we have, we could have a special event, we need a proper story, don't we? A proper story, you know, not one like mine. It's rubbish, mine. We need a proper story. Have we not got anybody that's been in a prison cell? You know, they saw a flash of light. You know, their tattoos fell off, their chains were free, you know, kind of, and we get ridiculous. We glorify the extraordinary without remembering that God works in the ordinary things. The power of ordinary story to re-remember who actually invited us and to start telling some of those stories. The power story. And of course, you know, kind of the stories of the Bible, but the stories that we are writing of what God is doing in our lives. We are all a collection of unique stories. And sometimes we don't know each other's story of what God has been doing in our lives. Number 6 answers the question, well, who would I invite? I have no friends. I have no friends. And this will come out as probably one of the main things in many of our congregations. I have no friends. So how on earth would we answer that question? Well, I'm really, really sorry, really sorry. I'm going to have to bring God into it. Can I just apologize, you know, for that, just in advance? I'm going to have to bring God into it. And so step number 6 is, who has God been preparing in my life? We simply ask God, is there somebody? Gracious God, is there somebody? And you can tell all your congregational members, you can tell all your congregational members, if they don't get an idea of somebody, they're off the hook. This is not about forced invitation at all. This is about connecting us with the fact that God might give us a little prompt, a little nudge in this area. It's about reconnecting us with God's nudge in our lives. Who has God been preparing in my life? How might this work in practice? Well, it might work like this. Gracious God, who do you want me to invite? No, not that person. Give me another. I think there's something like that anyway. Anyway, moving on. Number seven. If there was a training evening for an invitational event or a back to church Sunday, it would last 10 seconds. Now, I know, nothing in the Episcopal Church can last 10 seconds. I understand that. You'd have to have coffee beforehand and coffee afterwards. But the substantive bit of the training would last 10 seconds. And in the 10 seconds, what we would do is we would practice the question. So here's the training for an invitational event, or an invitational Sunday. Here's the training. It's 9 words in the right order. Sometimes I get this wrong, you know. It's so hard, so difficult. So here we are. Here's the training for an invitational Sunday. Here we go. Remember, it's going to be 10 seconds, this. I have to slow it down. Would you like to come to church with me? Training over. I tried to do it 10 seconds. I'm really sorry about that, you know. Why have we overcomplicated this thing? Why has this become so complicated? You know, I mean, in the end, if Jesus can get away with follow me, oh, it's just overcomplicates the whole thing. It's just ridiculous. It's got to be some form of simplicity at the heart of what God has given us. I understand this complexity, back of house, but actually, it's got to be simple. So, questions to ask if will you come to church with me is too difficult for you. Shall we go for a coffee? Would you like to go and see a film? Could you start using deodorant? Will you marry me? There are one or two questions out there that are as tricky as that one, but not that many. Anyway, so there you go. At step number eight, my wife intervened. My Lutheran German wife. She said, Michael! You can't have 12 steps, she said, without one of them being spiritual. Now, As my wife hasn't sinned since 1967, I pay tribute to her in this step. If you don't do any of the other steps, you'll definitely, definitely do step 8. What could it possibly be? Oh, thank goodness. We're on solid ground now, aren't we? Pray. Oh, fantastic. What a lovely Saturday afternoon we could have, making up some new collets. Wouldn't that be fantastic? Or, we could pray for courage. Boy, are we going to need some courage to face this. This is where we can put our prayer life into the area that we're really struggling with. I think God sometimes likes to wrestle with us, like he did with Jacob. I think there's a wrestling going on here. We all know this stuff. Wrestle back in the area of prayer. Now, number 9. If you don't do number 9, it's all been a waste of time. All been a waste of time. What could it possibly be? What have we missed? Oh, yeah. Make the invitation. Oh, this is where training gets so tiresome. Oh, don't make me do this, Michael. Don't make me do this. Yes, make the decision. But remember, success is just the invitation. It's not the answer to the invitation. Now, you know, last night I was really kind of concerned, worried, afraid for you. So I've had to put in a new slide just for you. Just for you. I've never done this anywhere before. How do you do this? How do you do this in the Diocese of Virginia? So here's your slide. How to ask the question. Mentally prepare yourself. Comb your hair and brush your teeth. Find a piece of level ground. Never do this on a hill. Because if they say yes, I don't want you falling over in shock. This is the health and safety part of the briefing. Then just ask. Then just ask. In fact, I want to say practice this without pressure. When you go back to your room later on, look in the mirror and say, would you like to come to church with me? Yes, I would actually. You're very handsome. Absolutely. Practice without pressure. See, practice is the key to mastering any skill. Practice, I think invitation is a bit like learning to drive a car. My daughter, Kirsty, of Budgie fame, has just learned to drive a car. All I'm saying to you is stay away from Manchester. That's all I can say. Now, one day, my wife came to me and she said, don't you think it's time that you went out with Kirsty in the car? And I said, well, what have I done wrong? Anyway, I did. And after 5 minutes, we have different kind of gears and stuff in the UK, of course. After 5 minutes, I said to Kirsty, there is a third gear, Kirsty. She says, I'm quite happy driving in second, thanks very much, but out, Dad. You know, you see, what's happening when you learn to drive a car is you're overthinking all the time, aren't you? What's that pedestrian doing? You know, kind of, oh, too fast, too slow, brakes, you know, kind of, you overthink the whole thing. Once you've learned to drive a car, once you've learned to drive, what tends to happen is you have no idea how you got here. For those of you who've driven here, how did you get here? It's all gone deeply unconscious. Deeply unconscious, it becomes habitual. An invitation is just the same. At the moment, it's tricky for us. We've not got the practice in yet. And so we overthink the whole thing. We overthink it. 10, 11, and 12 take us into continuous invitation. I am trying to get invitation into the life of the church. The second seminar is inviting people to stay. The third seminar is inviting people into a deeper walk with God, a deeper walk with God. But 10, 11, and 12 give us a hint of where we're going in this area. Number 10 is walk or drive with them to the church service that day. Under no circumstances are you to invite them and they say yes and then wait at the door of the church for them. Under no circumstances do that. Because you know what's going to happen, don't you? They ain't going to turn up. But you will get the Monday morning phone call, which goes a bit like this. I'm so sorry. two toes dropped off on Sunday morning and managed to super glue them back together again. So really, kind of save their toes and actually go and pick them up. Number 11 is, introduce them to your friends over coffee and food. You know your friends best. Introduce them to somebody they're going to have a good conversation with. This is about inviting them into the life of the church. I know you're going to kind of be discussing a little bit this later on. I'm not so sure about welcome. I'm not so sure. I'm not so sure you would want Jesus on your welcome team, by the way. You brood of vipers. Get thee behind me, Satan. Could never could be quite sure what he's going to say, you know, kind of in your... So, I wonder sometimes, is welcome a little bit of fear-driven thing there? Anyway, I just kind of just leave that with you. So introduce them to your friends over coffee and food. By the way, the reverse of number 11 is also true. You know the person in your congregation not to introduce them to. Not even on the 53rd Sunday must you do that. I've warned you. Anyway, there you go. Now, in between 11 and 12, a problem occurs. A problem occurs. All sensible people, at this point, they've invited their friend, they've picked them up, they've kind of sat through the service with them, they've had introduced them to friends, they've had some coffee. All sensible people, at this point, would like to ask their friend, how did it go? Can we get that question out? No. It goes, ha, 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 ha. And so what happens is we start to rationalize, well, they're adults, aren't they? You know, kind of, they now know where we are. They even know where they sit. You know, surely it doesn't need me. They're adults, aren't they? I'm telling you now, we have got thousands and thousands of people around the world that have been invited to church once, but not invited again. And the reason they've not been invited again is this stuff comes back at that moment. This stuff re-emerges at that moment. There could be the possibility of a no or a rejection. So we're going to move to step 12, which is assume they're coming the following week and invite them again. We keep on inviting them. Keep on inviting them. The website, which I mentioned to you before, is unlockingthegrowth.com. And again, if any of you kind of do Twitter, there's normally every single day a thought, you know, kind of coming from me in the area of this. Again, Unlocking the Growth, I think, is the Twitter one, which is useful for you. Again, lots of videos, lots of different things on there for you. And again, if you want to get exhausted, you can go into the seminar section and see exactly where I am around the world. That'll exhaust you. So, Seminar 2, there's the title of Seminar 2. I'm so sorry about this. How to double a congregation in a day and keep every single one. There's nothing like a ridiculous vision that's going to go wrong, is there? But I say to you is that unless you actually have a high vision, you don't put in place the things that need to be in place to actually give you a great opportunity of seeing some amazing things actually happen. So again, if I'm ever invited back, that's certainly an area, that would be the area that I would kind of look at. So we've looked at the reasons why Christians don't invite. The wounds of Christian leaders, the 12 steps of kicking the habit of being an uninviting church. I want to inspire 1 million voices of hope. The reason I'm here and the reason I keep going, and it is a very hard journey, but the reason I keep going is that my vision is 1 million Christians inviting 1 million friends in a day. That's my vision. And now for 10 consecutive years, I can tell you that I failed at that vision, in the sense that I've maintained the vision, but up until this point, last September, there were 200,000 accepted invitations. Now, I'm sure there were countless other invitations that weren't accepted, but that's the only thing I can count right now. But that's what my vision is. 1 million Christians inviting 1 million friends in a day. And so, In conclusion, I want to say this. Four questions to ponder. Question number one is why? Why do this? You know, why, you know, kind of give up, you know, a predictable business career where the money comes into the bank every single month, on the same day, no problems in financially, etc. Why do this? Why do this? Well, like other, you know, Episcopalian lay people or Anglican lay people, sometimes God calls to do something which might not have a priestly function. I think it probably does have a bit of a priestly function about it, but sometimes God calls somebody out, perhaps away from parish life, away from a diocesan life, you know, away from even a national life to an international life. But it could be any one of those areas. God calls. And so that's why. The second question is, why not? Why not actually see if it's possible to repair the wound that the church is suffering from in these areas? Why not see in our generation if we could actually kind of really honestly say that not only are we a welcoming church, I put the kind of the things there, welcoming church, possibly, but we're an invitational church as well. You know, could we work, could this be the first diocese where the majority of the churches actually say we are invitational as well as welcoming? Could that possibly be the case? Why not? And now, why not you? Why not you? Why not you try and see if it's possible with this tool of invitation to not only see people come into the life of the church and take a closer look at Christ, but see our congregations face their fears in this area, and as they face their fears, become transformed and see other things, other fruits that is not imaginable at this moment in time. So why not you? And the final question is, why not you now? Why not make a decision that this is actually something that we can do? Thank you ever so much for your hospitality.